You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Family status doesn't necessarily translate to healthy families.
You kind of are creating your best friends. You're making these little people who you would want to hang out with.
A spiritually strong ministry family culture doesn't happen automatically. It's created just like every other culture.
We made church fun and exciting. Like, this is something we get to do.
Dear young married couple, are you raising kids in ministry, or do you maybe foresee in the future you going into ministry?
If so, you really want to tune into this episode. We had the privilege of sitting down with Pastor Aaron and Heather Soto. They pastor a thriving church in Appleton, Wisconsin, and they provided so many helpful nuggets that we're taking away.
Yes.
On do's and don'ts for raising kids in ministry and really helping them to become all that God has called them to be.
Yeah, we of course see this Dear Young Married Couple as a ministry, and our kids, since day one, have been very involved in all of this.
Yeah.
So this episode actually for us was, I think, very helpful and very needed.
Yes.
To keep us on the same track. And, you know, we want to raise kids that love God and
are called according to his purpose.
Yeah.
A little bit more about Aaron and Heather Soto. They both went to Indiana Bible College, and Aaron's degree is in theology. Heather's degree is in Christian education, and they have three incredible children, all adults now. They're ages 25, 21, and 18. So they have experience. They know what they're talking about. They've done an awesome job, and you are in for a treat in this episode.
Yes.
Oh, so, and speaking of raising children.
Yeah. We actually be on the lookout in about a week. We have an announcement that we are super excited about.
So this time next week on Tuesday, we are sharing a big, big piece of news, and it's something that will help equip you as parents.
Yeah.
So listen into that next week.
Yeah. And if you're not following us on Instagram, that's a good place to stay connected so that you could see what's going to happen soon.
Drum roll, suspense. All right, here's to the episode.
Our kids are 5 and 6, and they are growing so fast that it's hard keeping up with buying new clothes.
But now we have found a solution so they don't have to outgrow their favorite clothes after only a few months, and that is Posh Peanut.
Posh Peanut is a great solution for many reasons. They have super soft and stretchy clothes that seem to grow with our kids, so they get longer wear out of them.
Yes, and our kids love Posh Peanut because of the incredibly soft viscose fabric from bamboo that stays soft even after you wash them over and over again.
When the kids were babies, we bought matching mommy baby PJ sets for them, and we started getting Posh Peanut daytime clothing too.
Last week, we got matching dresses for our daughter and our niece, and the girls absolutely love them. No complaints of it being itchy or uncomfortable, so praise God.
Right now, Posh Peanut is offering our listeners 20% off your first order with promo code DYMC.
So go to poshpeanut.com/DYMC and use promo code DYMC for 20% off your first order.
That's poshpeanut.com/DYMC, promo code DYMC.
Welcome, Pastor Soto and Sister Soto, to the podcast. We are so thankful you guys are with us today.
Welcome, guys.
It's our delight. Thank you for having us.
Yes, we know from several reports that you guys have raised some awesome kiddos while in ministry, and you guys come from different backgrounds. Pastor Soto, you came from a minister's home, and Sister Soto, you did not. You came from a divorced home. You guys both bring a lot of experience to the table in raising your own kiddos in ministry. So we're excited to dive into this rich story today. So thank you for being willing to share it with us.
Delighted. Our pleasure.
Well, we have a lot of questions. I think, well, just to be clear, I think everyone is a minister, but I know that you are talking specifically to kids that maybe they're pastor's kids, or or you're talking to the parents, really.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's a lot of things that you've seen done really well and things that could be done better. So I'm really curious to pick your brain today.
Yes. So let's start with this idea that oftentimes people think that if you have a certain status as a PK or an MK or, you know, some sort of kid in ministry or family in ministry, that you're automatically going to have a healthy family or a healthier family because of the work you're doing in the kingdom. Mm-hmm. Talk about what that if that's true or not, the validity you see in that statement or the errors thereof.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for addressing the topic. This was your idea, and I think it's a needed topic. So many people are ministry minded, but still a little frustrated on the home front. And one thing that Heather and I have learned is that family status doesn't necessarily translate to healthy families. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Bible shows us in the Old Testament families in high definition, you know, it gives us the warts and all.
Yeah.
And if you take a few moments to reflect, you realize that most of the heroes of the Old Testament had very troubling family dynamics. Even consider the patriarchs, for instance, you know, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Abraham denied that he was married to Sarah. Isaac and Rebekah played favorites with their kids. Yes. Jacob created a rival culture among his children, and their status in God didn't translate to healthy families. In fact, the more we learn about our biblical heroes, the more we learn about what not to do with our families and otherwise. And so at times people in ministry find themselves in the same situation. They're strong on the ministry side of life, but there are unique pressures that come to ministry.
Right.
And they're anointed, they're respected as leaders, but perplexingly, the home front is substandard. And so a spiritually
strong— Why would you say that is?
Well, I think that number one, ministers believe in osmosis. They believe that if I can get my kid in proximity to the church and the work of the church, that this is going to happen automatically. Mm-hmm. But a spiritually strong ministry family culture doesn't happen automatically. It's created just like every other culture.
That's
It's created by the grace and power of God. It's created by the authenticity of the parent. It's created by their training, not their intentions.
So good.
How do we, and this is probably a hard question to answer, but I'm just going to answer or ask it anyways, but what does a healthy family look like? You know, because there can be misconceptions there too of like, oh, we're so healthy. And then all of a sudden when they're 18, everything just falls to pieces. Like, what does that look like?
That's an incredible question. Yes. I think it, first of all, a foundational thought about this would just be the fact that it's the admission that our children are the heritage of the Lord, Psalm 127. Mm-hmm. And a healthy family has this, they live this value. It's not a stated value. It's a lived value that our children belong to the Lord. Mm. And I love Hannah's declaration in 1 Samuel when she says, if you will give me a child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life. And so she was saying, I'm all in. This is a gift from you, and I'm all in.
And I would say that we are given our children. That is our primary responsibility, is to get them to heaven.
Right.
And so that's the way I approached it, was my children are a gift from God for me to take to heaven. It's the only thing I can take to heaven.
And I love that about Heather, my wife, and she is dead serious about that. And if you want to see her fierce, it's when she doesn't feel like her kids are, you know, between the white lines on the highway of holiness. And she is going to advocate for heaven. So Heather and I have a dream. And our dream is not for our kids to go to Harvard. It's for our kids to go to heaven.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
When you have that desire and you don't have just this secular view, but you have a truly biblical worldview about who your kids belong to and where ultimately they need to go.
Yes.
It really answers a lot of questions for you.
Okay. So say that they're okay. We want them in heaven. Awesome. But like, what things need to be in place? And I think this goes for any parent here. What needs to be in place, or how are you guys cultivating an atmosphere and not just expecting osmosis to push him into heaven, but what are you doing to cultivate the soil that they can grow into this healthy thing that God's making them?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. Heather and I are really a big believer in family systems and traditions that are going to support this kind of an outcome.
Yeah.
And so if there's a particular area of the ocean that biologists want to restore life to, they will sink structure into that area of the ocean. And that attracts the barnacle life and the reef life, and then the reef fish, then the predator fish come. And before you know it, that area of the ocean is teeming with life. Structure invites life. And so we have a lot of apostolic, you know, Christian kids who are experience rich, but their relationship poor because they lack family structure and tradition. So we're racing off to services and camps and events. And
well, brother, that's structure. That is structure. Get him in the youth camp.
Right. And so it's just, I don't think that we're being thoughtful. We're not being intentional. Yeah. And so creating a system, and to get a little bit more specific, we're talking about the traditions of devotion, family worship, the system of dad coming home when he's supposed to, and remembering it's family night.
Yes.
And this lovely lady sitting next to me is the enforcer of that.
I remember when our kids were little, we had little kids and they were crazy busy, like yours probably are right now. And we had a little mat that we would set them on the floor, and dad and I were going to talk into, we were going to be uninterrupted. So we'd set a timer. And they knew what that meant. Like, they were not allowed to ask for anything. They could get a couple toys, and they had to sit there and play while dad and I, and they saw us communicate and talk to each other uninterrupted.
Nice.
And I just remember that being a very important part of our younger parenting life. Cause we were so, you know, you feel like you never can finish a conversation with each other.
Yeah. That's a really good structured activity to try and help hone, you know, a behavior that you'd like.
Yes.
How early, Brother Soto, did you go into ministry? Like, was it, did you have a lot of ministry before you started parenting?
I started in ministry right in Bible school and went right into full-time ministry as a youth pastor.
Yeah.
So, and then we had Blake
2 years in.
Yeah. 2 years. So okay. I don't know if that's a lot of time or not.
But. Yeah. But you were, but your kids were born into a ministerial environment. And I love how you're saying the, you know, the structure is not necessarily the, you know, all the camps and the events and the church services and the, all the activities. The structure is, you know, those systems that you're putting in place in the home to cultivate that spirit in your children.
So, okay, this is so good. There's so many things I want to like ask and push, but so like you said, Brother Soto, that, that your wife, Heather, is the enforcer.
Like, yes.
Was there ever a clash there, or how do you learn to take like that influence? Because I've seen that happen before. And of course, you know, we've worked with so many people and everywhere, and we've seen this happen where there's a clash between, hey, I need you. Like, I feel the disconnect. We need to focus on the kids, or we need to focus on the family.
Sure.
And then the other pull of like, but so-and-so is in the hospital. I need to go visit them. I need to go pray for them. Is it family night, or is it, I need to go pray for them? Like, it's sometimes it's a clash between like crisis, but also, you know, like consistency too.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's a great question. I would have to tell you that, you know, marriage is about mutual submission, and we are commanded to submit to one another in honor of God. And so Heather and I, we serve the same God and we have the same goals, but I have a few more responsibilities outside of the home front. And so I need her to be an enforcer in my life and to be strong, because there are times you asked if we've ever had a clash before. The answer is yes.
Ever.
The answer is absolutely yes.
Okay. You're honest. Good. Thank God.
Yeah. And there are times when she just basically was like, you know, we're about to have a very important conversation, and I need to advocate for our children and for our family. And you're getting a little bit distracted. Your calendar's getting a little bit too full. Mm-hmm. We need to reset. We only get one chance at this. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I'm eager in ministry, the work of God. I don't want to neglect my family, but I think that I have a tendency to wander in my priorities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but my wife's resolve is a safety measure.
Mm-hmm.
And I receive that when she, mm-hmm. when she advocates for our family, I appreciate it. And I am humbled that she would call me out. Mm-hmm. I need that sometimes.
That's good.
That is good.
Heather, what is that switch that flips that tells you, we need to have a conversation?
I think just when we've been gone a lot and traveling a lot, and he's had a lot of meetings or he's on different boards, and I've kind of, you know, you'll just see a pattern where he's not been able to be present like he needed to be. And so I'll just say, hey, we got this stuff coming up for Bryson or one of our children. And I'll clear it with the secretary at church and say, hey, he really needs to be at this, or, you know, hey, could you take Bryson out to breakfast tomorrow morning before school? Just kind of like throw different things in there that he can't be there.
That's good.
That's really good.
Yeah. You're bringing into, you know, perspective this concept of balance, and balance is kind of a pop culture word, pop psychology word. It kind of gets thrown out there like, oh, we all need to be balanced. But can you talk about like your perspective on balance, especially in terms of raising kids in ministry?
Yes, we do not believe in balance.
Talk to us about that.
We don't believe in balance. We don't believe that every week is going to look the same and every Monday is going to be the same.
Right.
There are some weeks that are just an absolute train wreck, you know, because the kids went to youth camp and we had three funerals while they were gone.
Or someone passed away. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So ministry doesn't happen like that. It's not predictable. It's just, there's an ebb and a flow to it. So we practice fairness. And we believe that over the course of a month, we should be able to look back at that month and say, we were fair to God, to our emotional and physical health.
Nice.
We were fair to our family. And so we know that the pendulum's going to swing a little one way on a given week. And so maybe I wasn't home like I needed to be on a given week. And so then Heather, she's the architect. She's like, we're bringing that pendulum back this week and we're going to be more present because of last week. And I think that many ministers and families live with their disillusion, and there's a little bit of shame involved because they've never been able to capture this elusive thing called balance. And I just don't believe that that's really attainable. Unless, you know, you have perfect saints and you don't have anybody to disciple and nobody dies and nobody has marriage problems. And, you know, it's just ministry doesn't work that way. So that's our idea.
How'd you come to that realization? Like, what was the impetus for that?
It was the quest. It was the quest for balance. And we've been challenged in many forms and fronts and coached, hey, you know, you need to be balanced in ministry. And we finally just realized this doesn't work with ministry. You know, it just doesn't happen like that. And so then we thought, well, what is God honoring? What is the most God honoring way that we can live our lives and be all in? Now, we could have defaulted and said, all right, I'm going to show up on Sundays and Wednesdays. I'm going to try to preach good on Sunday, teach good on Wednesday, but I'm not answering any calls, and I'm not going to neglect the flock, and anything that wasn't planned, I'm not going to respond to. But we know good shepherds don't do that.
Right.
We could have gone, you know, pulled our whole family under a rock and said, we're going to try to do, you know, ministry, but we're just going to focus on family primarily. But there's enough love to go around. And the Bible says, you know, that we should redeem the time. And I believe that that is such an important thing, that we find a way to redeem the time. And we have to be creative sometimes. And the Bible says that in 2 Peter 1:3, that God has given us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. That would include time. So think about this. God has given us enough time to do everything he's called us to do, or he wouldn't be just. So that includes time. God has given us enough time. So that means that we need to prioritize the time that God has given us.
That's good. That is so good. Chris had just, I'm sorry. Chris had, when you said sparked a thought, Chris had just bought a book called The Tyranny of the Urgent.
Yeah.
And it's so good. It talks about, remember that point you just made?
Yeah. And basically what you just said, but even putting it in the perspective of Christ, you know, he had accomplished all that he was tasked to do. And it didn't mean that there weren't, you know, more blind people and more lame people that needed to be healed and taught. There were those, right? But he had accomplished all he was tasked to do. And so you are given, like you said, the amount of time to accomplish all that you're tasked to do.
That's so right. Good. And what are the odds, if I don't do anything with my kids now, that if somehow my wish were granted that I got a 25th hour in the day, that I would use that for my kids?
Right.
If I'm
right.
Not doing it now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you don't need another hour and you don't need another day in the week. You need to prioritize your time, redeem the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, you know, my valuable time was, I was a mom. First and foremost, I'm a wife and a mom, and my home is the most important environment that I need to be taken care of. And other things might suffer, but that's where my priorities were and are. I still have one at home. He's 18, but my season in life is changing. I'm not so needed there anymore. But when they were growing up, that was my mission and my ministry first.
Right. Yeah, that's good. Talk about, Heather, some of the creative ways, and we're asking for ourselves because we have a 3 and 4 year old.
We're trying to figure out that fairness, balance. Yes.
So what does fairness look like? You know, say you're a traveling minister or you're an active minister at your home church, and you want to, you know, bring your kids along. You want them to feel like things are fair and that they are receiving the attention and the nurturing that they need.
But not to create a diva.
Yeah, but not to create a diva. Yeah. So what are some practical ways that you guys navigated that when the kids were young?
Well, I think that goes to price and privilege. And my husband probably could explain a little better, but we practiced it. We started a church. We did that for 7 years. We also had a mother church. So I'll let you explain a little bit more about how we celebrate that.
Sure. With our kids, we have this principle called privilege and price. And we have seen ministry kids ruined only on price. Mm-hmm. That's all they knew about ministry was paying the price. And we've also known ministry children who are raised only on privilege. Ooh. And that ruined them as well.
Wow.
And so we've decided that we want our children to know that it's good and reasonable to experience both things in ministry. So we give them context when I'm blessed to travel and speak in different settings. And we've been in many hotels. And so when we walk into that hotel and there's a hospitality basket there, it's like, guys, is this privilege or price? And they're like, this is privilege, Dad. That's right.
Like, all right, dig in.
Yes, yeah.
And
yes.
So we ask this question all the time. Is this privilege? In fact, one time you want to tell a story about Bryson.
Yeah. My husband was also youth president for, I think, 6 years. And so he got used to some privileges.
Yeah.
And so when he wasn't anymore, we went somewhere and we were on vacation, I think, and there was no basket. And he was like, Mom, where is our basket? What is wrong with these? Nobody's taking care of them.
There was a hospitality basket in every hotel room.
Yeah. Or golf carts to drive wherever you're at a camp. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That is so funny.
We talk very practically.
Right. I love that. I love it. So you guys actually use those words with your kids and you have them identify, is this privilege or price? Talk about some of the price examples that you would have them talk through.
You know, when we were pastoring a thriving church and we felt to plant another church. So we would have three services a day. Mm-hmm. And we're going to that daughter work and to preach, and we're doing it all over again. Mm-hmm. And the kids are tired. Mm-hmm. And we're driving, we're like, guys, you are standing in the company of greatness because you're paying a price today.
That's right.
You're tired. and we're going to put a smile on our face, and we're going to love people that Jesus died for. It's not always easy, but we honor you for paying a price today.
Yeah. Wow.
And then we would say, and afterwards we're going to go get a, you know, we're going to go to Starbucks and get you a caramel frappuccino or something. And we're going to celebrate the fact that you paid a price today.
Right.
And so over the course of the years, we've had a lot of opportunities to give them context. And one of the great joys of our life is to see that all three of our children are ministry postured, and they don't have a wrong attitude or view of ministry that it should be all privilege or all price. Yeah. They understand that both come with a package.
Yeah.
That's so good. I think I'm going to start using that.
We are so going to start using that. That is really good. Just because
it's a great way of framing everything that you do. Mm-hmm. And when you do encounter difficulties, or let's say when we're stressed out and we're preparing for the next thing,
yes.
We could say, look, this is the price we're all paying so that we can have the privilege when we are in a beautiful place or location or enjoying the fruit basket. I love that.
I love the basket concept.
But that's so wonderful. I love that. It's a great perspective, and it's such an easy thing to implement, but to give them that perspective of here is your buy-in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And ministry is hard work. So they know that. And for us to not acknowledge that you're working hard, we get it. Yeah. Daddy's not home right now because he had to run to the hospital, but you know what? Daddy will be back and we'll go to the park. Or, you know, you just give them something to look forward to. Maybe not today, but there will be fun and happy times.
Yeah, I love that.
It's really good.
What's another perspective that you like to instill in your kids to get that, like that? That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So, what else did you try and you were intentional to teach them or to bring them into so that they didn't feel exiled or, you know, just to give them that right perspective? Sure.
We'll be right back to the interview, but first we wanted to share something that we are really excited about.
So, you know, we all have those times where we don't feel super connected to our spouse and we really don't know what conversations to have to get us to that connected place. And then on top of that, we're so busy that we don't prioritize those conversations.
And that's why we created the monthly live date night.
And monthly live date night is every month on a Friday night for 90 minutes, 60 minutes. We focus on a topic that you guys pick. And then 30 minutes, we do a Q&A and it's live where we're all together asking questions and giving answers on topics related to your marriage, your intimacy. And we share tools. We have handouts that we call homework because we want you to be there to listen and to soak in, but we really want you to take action in your marriage too.
So come join us live for the next monthly live date night. Check the link in the show notes for dates and details.
All right, back to the interview.
Well, I think that it's important that we don't deputize our children to be referees, that they are allowed to be players. And by that, I mean, as ministers, we go to church and we've all been in church so much. We know when the sound's not right. Right. We know when the words on the screen aren't matching, you know, what we're singing, and when the ushers miss the handout thing. And so our kids, I mean, we can give them a whistle and kind of create this little monster where they're looking around and trying to figure out what's wrong, what hasn't been done right. And we've always wanted to celebrate that when we're in church, we are worshipers.
Yeah.
So I'm not a frantic pastor looking around trying to, you know, and the sound's not right or it's wonky or whatever the situation is. Mm-hmm. I'm going to continue to be a worshiper. And I'm just going to trust that the people who have been delegated certain responsibilities are going to either make it right or we're going to have a conversation later. And, you know, and it's going to be okay. It's not the end of the world. And I see a lot of pastors' kids who have been ruined in the church service because they've got they're just looking, they're the watchdogs. And if something's not right, they obsess over it rather than being obsessed with worship. So from a very early age, I would hold my children. I would sit in the sanctuary with my children, not on a platform and I would just put my child on my lap, Blake on my lap, and I would teach him how to raise his hands, and I would bring him up to the front to be a worshiper.
That's good.
And I just struggle a little bit when I see that child who is a PK or a preacher's kid of some sort, and you can just tell they have a completely different experience in that church service. Mm-hmm. They're not, they're the ref. They're not mm-hmm. the player. They're not the worshiper.
I think that I always, we made church fun and exciting. Like, this is something we get to do. We're going to see Jesus. We're excited to be here. We weren't ever really in the molly grubs to, we got to get up and go to church again. Or we just always made it positive and exciting. Mm. And this is my reasonable service. It's one of my favorite verses in Romans. And it's just important that you make it a happy thing.
Yeah,
so that's good.
Today we pastor a thriving church. We have two services to serve our congregation. It's the exact same service. And so the first service is at 8:30. The second one's at 11. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be walking in the building at 7 a.m., which means we get up at least by 6. Mm-hmm. And so I have a tradition on Sunday mornings. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
What's your tradition?
I blare praise break music.
Nice.
And we are having throwdown praise music.
6 a.m. is a little much, but.
But you know what? Even when our kids were little, we would invite them, come lay on our bed and you can sort of wake up, and we would, bring them something. And then I would bring my laptop over to them, and it wouldn't be long before their little head starts to shake and they're waking up with some praise. And
nice.
When you hear the praise break music, it is Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So we always try to start with, just like that, an anthem of celebration. Mm. And we want our children to treasure and understand that this is the day the Lord has made.
Yes.
That's beautiful.
That is really good. I love it. So man, good. You must have had your coffee though at 6 a.m. to be playing that sort of thing.
Right? He's a morning person.
That's great.
That's so good.
I love though, you're training them to celebrate, to have positive associations with the service that they are part of, because it's not just you serving, they're serving as well.
Well, you're not trying to control them into a a channel of this is how you behave, this is how you think, this is how it's creating a place where they are able to come to that conclusion by themselves.
Right.
Can
you talk a little bit about that concept of maybe when an older child or a teen feels controlled by their parents' ministry? What are some practical ways that you guys have helped that to not be the outcome for your three adult children now?
That's a great question. my son and my daughter-in-law are writing a book for PKs. It's going to be amazing. One of the chapters in that book talks about standing in your parents' shadow. Mm. And they talk about that a little bit. But I do think that at times as ministry, we throw that authority card a little bit more than we need to with our children. And we need to know that there's more to raising children than controlling them. And how we relate to our children has to evolve as they get older. Just think about the stages that children go through. The way that you make the decision of choosing a pediatrician, how involved is your child in that decision? But then when they get a little older and it's time for them to do homework and you're making that decision, how involved are they in that decision? And then you're choosing a college. Where are you going to go to college? And then how are you involved in that decision? And then they're choosing a spouse. How involved are you? So you see how there's a scale there. And
that's true.
And so your effectiveness as a parent is dependent on your ability to maintain influence in your child's life. But many parents draw the conclusion that if they just control their child, that's the way to do it. And so it's like, I'm going to be effective because I was effective when they were 1.5. I just picked them up and put them where I wanted them to be. But no matter how good you are at imposing your authority, and many ministers are very good at that, no matter how good you are at it, there comes a point in your child's life where control isn't the goal anymore. And so if you fail to move out of the control phase, I should say, at the appropriate time, what you're going to find is that you're going to have the opposite effect. And controlling parents are always going to lose control. So you have to help them discover who they are. I did a 10-week devotional series with my children on Called According to His Purpose, Romans 8:28, and helping them to discover their purpose and finding out what it is that God is calling you to do and God's hardwired you to be something and to do something. What is that? Mm-hmm. And we, Heather and I, want to get on the dream friendly zone with our kids. What are your dreams? Mm-hmm. And then when our kids aren't behaving right, now it's not correctional, the conversation, it's directional. Mm-hmm. We're advocating for your dream. Mm-hmm. And so that's not control. That's not control. Mm-hmm. That's encouragement. Yeah. That's coaching.
And you're really encouraging them to have conversations. You're being a conversation friendly parent. Absolutely. when you're not focused on control. And I like how you said the dream friendly zone. You know, you're saying, hey, share with me about your dreams, even if they don't make sense yet, or even if, you know, we could poke holes in them. Let's just talk about it and dream big.
Yes. Absolutely. And the whole idea of having conversations, Heather and I have determined we don't allow our children to have one word responses.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so, but we also understand that the quality of the conversation is determined by the quality of the question.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if we just say, how was your day? Good. All right. Well, you can expect that kind of a response because
That
was a lame question. The question is, what's the best thing that happened to you today?
What's the worst
thing that happened to you today?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a wonderful thing to do, is just to teach your children how to have thoughtful conversations.
Yeah.
Man, I really like that. Mm-hmm. I remember Adeline, was it yesterday? We were in the, we were all getting ready and stuff, and we were talking about what we want to be when we grow up. Krista was doing, asking her some questions, and she was enjoying it. And I remember Adeline saying something like, what do you want to be? And she's like, I want to do that thing where you go out in the yard and make a lot of noise. And my wife's like, the mower. Yeah. She's like, yes. My wife's like, oh, that's called a landscaper, and you could do that. She's like, so, and then I loved how Krista approached it. She said, she's like, you know, what are the pros? You know, what are the good things that come from being a landscaper, where you get to be outside, you get to see the sunshine, you get to smell the grass? What are the negatives from being a landscaper? And Adeline had all these different, you know, things that she wanted to be. Uh-huh. It's so curious about
life. A librarian, she mentioned.
Yeah, a librarian. Yeah. And she's like, so what are the pros? Okay, you get to be around books. But the hard thing was, you know, you have to be quiet in the library. Do you think you could be quiet in the library?
I can answer that for you.
But I love that's what you're saying, but maybe on a, you know, a higher level order, you know, your kids at this point, you're probably not thinking 4.5.
Not anymore.
Right. But I love how you're not trying to control where they go, but you become a safe place for them to express the dreams that they have, mm-hmm. and maybe what God's laying on their heart.
Yeah.
But that also means you have to have a really good relationship and have cultivated that beforehand.
Right.
Yes. True.
Yeah. That's how do you cultivate a relationship of, you know, you're still the authority figure as a parent, but you do come alongside. I know some people say, like, you know, we're not our children's friends.
Well, and also you're their kid's pastor too.
Yeah. So talk about the different hats that you have on at various times with your kids.
Well, I feel that when our kids were, you know, talking about what they wanted to be when they grew up, and, you know, it evolves the older they get, and sometimes they'd be leaning a direction where it wasn't really going to work with ministry. Mm-hmm. And so I would just say, you know, well, I mean, that's a great dream, but do you think that would fit into your, you know, I know you feel called to ministry. Do you think you'd be able to do that with ministry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just kind of making them think about it without saying, oh, no, you can't do that. That'll never work.
Right.
Just try to help them process, oh, maybe I really couldn't be an astronaut and be a pastor.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And you were referencing how, you know, to have that kind of relationship, to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And Heather has a great perspective on this about, you know, friends, the idea of being a friend.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think that I am not my children's friend when they're little. Okay. It's really interesting. I feel like you kind of are creating your best friends. Mm-hmm. You're making these little people who you would want to hang out with. Mm-hmm. And who, as they grow up and become adults, what kind of person are you making? And wow. Yeah. I'm not their friend right now because I'm going to be the authority and I'm going to say things they don't really like and they're not going to like me. And there's pressures to give in, to be their friend. Like, well, you know, my daughter's going to be upset with me if I don't let her go to that friend's house, but I have wisdom of what kind of person she maybe shouldn't be hanging out with. And I'm going right. to say no, but she's mad at me. But I can't take that super personally because eventually she's going to know that my daughter and I have done some sessions together and she's like, Mom was right. I hated it at the time, but
yep.
I have to trust my instincts and not be her best friend right now. But we sure. are now. She's almost 22 and it's That's just super good. Cool how she's someone I love hanging out with her. Like she's my turning into my best friend.
Yes.
And that's amazing.
That's beautiful.
That's amazing. I was just telling Krissa yesterday that I was like, man, you're creating a conversationalist. Like, cause Addie was just talking and talking and talking. I could see how that would happen though. If you cultivate those things, if you speak those things into their life,
yeah,
absolutely. You could really have something beautiful with your kid. Cause let's face it, you're going to spend a lot of Christmases together.
Right.
You might as well like that person.
Yeah. Right? I like that concept. Cause you hear people on both sides of that argument, like where we're not our kids' friends or that, yes, I want to be my kids' friends, but you're saying, you know, growing up when they're little, you may not be their friend in their mind, right? But yeah. you're creating your best friend as you parent along the way.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
How would you answer that same question?
Well, I also agree that we have to be careful. Sometimes we want to break the tension in the room and just give them what they want, our mm-hmm. children what they want. And our children can really do a good job of making us feel bad about doing right things.
Yes.
Because they don't have the vantage point. They're not thinking the way we are. They don't have the vantage point that we right. have. And so I think you have to maintain that tension. And tension's what causes the violin to make music on that string. Yeah. And so if you break the tension, there's no music. Mm-hmm. If your child gets everything that they want and they're able to back you into a corner and you're the one who's always conceding, and you're not going to create the kind of tension that makes a masterpiece, that makes music. So that tension is good.
Yeah.
And they need to learn to live with that tension of strategic disappointment.
Yeah.
So strategic disappointment is taking the pacifier away from the three-year-old, right?
Yeah.
Strategic disappointment is telling your 18-year-old they're going to pay for their own cell phone.
Yes.
Or telling the 28-year-old to get out of the basement and stop playing video games. So, and thank God I don't have those scenarios. Yeah. But I think that we need to understand the power of strategic disappointment.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah.
I like that.
What are some other strategic disappointments that specifically when you're raising kids in ministry that you might implement?
Well, I think that because we are called according to His purpose, it's very easy for ministry children to go through seasons where they want to be like everybody else, kind of like Samson, you know, with his Nazarite vows. And the thing that really broke him was that he just wanted to be an ordinary man with extraordinary gifts.
Yes.
And here's the thing. Every gift that God gives you is like a power tool. If you use it wrong, it can kill you. It can destroy you.
Yeah.
And so when your child is kind of like at that point where they're just a little bit wayward or distracted, and all of a sudden they start asking for permission to be ordinary. I think that there are times when you have to really advocate for that dream, that calling that they've given expression to. I have this little thing that I talk about, you know, honor your kids by the magnitude of your request for them. Create
what
a culture.
That mean? Yeah.
That means create a culture of expectation. Ask great things of your kids. Mm-hmm. Huh. If you don't expect anything from your children, they won't let you down.
Right.
But if you expect great things from your children, they won't let you down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the story of Abraham and Isaac is a great example of that, where Abraham is going to offer him as a sacrifice to the Lord, because the Lord's asked for him, mm-hmm. For Isaac. And Abraham puts the wood on his son, and he carries the fire. Yeah. So who's carrying the heavier load here? Huh. And then they have to climb a mountain. Mm. And then he has to lay his son, who, if he can carry a load up a mountain, he can take the knife away from 100-plus-year-old, right? Right. But look at this young man. Mm-hmm. He's able to carry a load, he's able to climb a mountain, and he's willing to be offered. I think this is a wonderful description of our ministry children. They can carry a load, they can climb a mountain, and they're willing to be offered. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we have this view, this destructive, cancerous idea that, you know, they don't really want this. They don't mm-hmm. really want to live for God. They don't really want ministry. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys have ever been to North American Youth Congress, mm-hmm. but there's mm-hmm. this incredible impartation and anointing on these young people, mm-hmm. yeah. and they're ready to take over the world. Yeah. But I'm afraid they're going back to some churches who expect nothing of them.
Yeah.
Go back to parents who have nothing to expect yes. of them. And they're willing to be laid down. They're willing to be tied down on the altar and give their lives.
Yes,
right.
But nobody is giving them that mm-hmm. Abraham journey.
I don't think it even occurred to our kids that they went to church three times on Sunday. Honestly, people would say, "You go to church three times?" And they'd be like, "Yeah," kind of like, "That's not
doesn't
normal.
Everybody?"
Yeah. Yeah.
So we, you know, they were, it wasn't unexpected. Like they were like, uh-huh. "This is terrible." You know, it was like, yeah. "This is what we do."
And we're going up the mountain. We're carrying the load. Right. Yep.
So here's a question. I've heard of young people who feel like their parents expect so much from them and are a little mm-hmm. bit resentful for that too. Mm-hmm. Is there fairness there? Or how would you go about that?
Yes, I think that there can be an unhealthy expectation mm-hmm. from parents, and we need to be thoughtful about when we put our foot on the gas, mm-hmm. and we need to be thoughtful about what we're asking our kids to do and to become. And I think we need to be careful that we don't put rivals in our children's lives. Yes. Mm-hmm. Where their expectation is academic, it's not apostolic.
Mm-hmm. Or sports.
Or whatever it is. Yeah. And we can put rivals in our children's lives. And so we don't expect anything from them in terms of memorizing a scripture mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or sacrificing for the kingdom. But you better get straight A's because you're going to get that scholarship. Mm-hmm. And we're putting a rival in their life. Mm-hmm. I remember really my first son, Blake, mm-hmm. He's a natural athlete. This is my first boy. You know, he's got a rocket arm and he's 3 years old. What dad isn't proud of him, right? I was a kid.
Right.
And so, I mean, I taught him to play football and baseball and soccer. He was a boy among men when he played with his peers. Mm-hmm. I just got the biggest kick out of that. And we were having our nightly prayer together. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about how we can only have one God. And, and he alone has to be the ultimate of our life. And I said, "Blake, do you love Jesus more than you love sports?" And he looked at me and he said, "I don't know, Dad."
Mm-hmm. Wake up call.
And it was yeah. like, I did that.
Yeah.
Ooh. As the dad, I put a rival in my son's mm-hmm. life.
Wow.
And so there can be some resentment, especially when those expectations mm-hmm. aren't apostolic. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm being pushed and cajoled in a particular way. And sometimes young people can sort of see through that. It's like, where's the expectation for my walk with God?
That's mm-hmm. good.
You know? And our yeah. children did participate in school sports and they did participate in theater. And, but there was times where if it was conflicting with church, mm-hmm. that was always a, you know, they knew that was not a mm-hmm. sport they could participate in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, that's just how we chose.
That's yeah. so good. No rivals.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's really good, man. You guys, I feel like there's probably about an hour and a half more that we can ask.
Yeah, exactly.
But we won't do that to you. How could people continue this line of thinking, or questioning or conversation between themselves and their spouse about raising kids? Like, do you have any books or recommendations, podcasts that you'd recommend?
I have just a real practical book that I recommend to a lot of moms that have young, strong-willed children.
Okay.
two of my kids are pretty strong-willed. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Cynthia Tobias, but she wrote a book called You Can't Make Me, But I Can Be Persuaded.
Ooh, okay.
Sounds and it's good. Awesome. It's
I'm
so
gonna get
good.
That book.
It really helped me a lot in my thinking and try. It's not always a battle, but some children it is. Mm-hmm. And so the way you talk to them, and it's just very helpful.
Awesome.
Yeah,
okay.
I think I have two battles.
Yeah, I know. If they're two very strong-willed children. So we'll put that in the show notes so people can click on the link to get that book. Any other yeah. resources or recommendations you have?
I think just one recommendation that I would have is be strategic with your spouse about your children.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about what's happening. How are we doing, you and me?
Yeah.
You know, spouse conversations, but how are we doing as a family? And sometimes we can identify that, you know, our family's under an attack right now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's mm-hmm. a spirit of anger that's just like coming into mm-hmm. our home, and
yeah.
we need to recognize that. Or maybe we both realize one of our children, something's a little bit off there. Let's talk about that. Let's pray about that. Mm-hmm. Let's have strategic, anointed spirit-led conversations, mom and dad, mm-hmm. About our children. We have a tendency to see but not say until we're really disappointed or really upset about something. Yeah. So let's be proactive and create a tradition or a system of communication with our spouse about family and children. Mm-hmm. And of course, Heather and I, this morning, we were together in our sunroom and holding hands and blessing our children and covering them and knowing what's going on in their day. And let the first fruits of your God gifting be for your family. So many people are listening to me today through this podcast, and you're a great communicator. You're a great leader. You're attentive, but you're not commanding your strength at home.
Mm-hmm.
And bring those mm-hmm. giftings home
yeah.
and say, Lord, help me to offer the first fruits of my gifting to my home. The Lord will anoint you for that.
Amen. I was just reminded of a funny story when the kids were little and we were doing devotion, and we just had a lot of anger. I don't know how old the kids were, but they were just bickering and fighting. And so we were having devotions, and you decided to invite Jesus into our home. And
that's
so
right.
How did you?
I just said, we're going to have a special guest for our devotion. And they were all excited. I told them all day. And so it was devotion time. I went to the front door. I said, oh, he's here. And they jumped up and they ran to the door, and I opened the door and I said, Jesus, come in. Their mouths dropped. They're looking around the corner. They're trying to figure out. And immediately it registers with them.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't see him, but he's here.
Mm.
And so I invited him in and I said, hey kids, why don't you show Jesus your bedroom? So we all went and showed him the house and everything. And then we sat down and had a devotion with Jesus. And then I said, hey, what do you guys think about, should we just ask Jesus to live here? And they're like, yes.
That's so good.
So the next day when Blake and Braylon were having a little fight,
yeah.
I was like, Jesus is here. And they're like, oh, you know.
It worked for a while.
Yeah, they were just like, oh, I forgot.
That's brilliant. I love it.
I'm going to do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
it worked for a while.
Oh, that's great.
Like, Forrest, you say yes, mommy, because Jesus is here.
He's watching.
But that's just so supporting good. The idea of if God's given you creativity, if God has given you anything, leverage it for your family.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let your first fruits be for your family.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, we're going to wrap up our episode here the way that we close out each episode, and that is by asking you guys, rewind back to your first year of marriage. You've been married for how long now?
27
years.
27.
Wow. So rewind back to 26, 27 years ago and fill in the blank with the advice that you wish you would have received. Dear young married couple.
Go ahead.
I would say, dear young married couple, marriage is an unconditional commitment to an imperfect person.
Yes.
Ooh, that's good. Yes.
And to just understand that there's no perfect person. There was only one and he didn't get married. And so,
right.
And so just with that expectation, being gracious and grace filled towards one another, as we see those imperfections, and not allowing those imperfections to diminish in any way the promises that we made,
yeah,
to be what God has called us to be for mm-hmm. them.
And I would say, dear young married couple, you're on the same team. Always. Mm-hmm. You're not in opposition to each other. Just remember, you know, you've heard that statement. If you're in the same boat and one of you is sinking the other end, you're both going down.
You're drilling right. holes in the bottom of their boat.
Yeah. Right, right. You're on the yeah. same team.
Yeah.
That's always so remember.
Good. Love that. You guys, this has been so full of nuggets that people can take home yes. and really just, you know, let it soak in, you know, look further into these concepts, listen to it again, take notes.
Yeah.
This is beautiful. We're going to take a lot from
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I was just thinking sure. that we're going to apply a whole bunch of this stuff because a lot of it's applicable for us.
Yeah.
And it's definitely something that we want to be incredibly good at. And thank you so much for doing this pre-work for us
yeah.
to teach us.
Paving the way.
Yeah.
Love
it's
it.
Pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. If folks want to get in contact with you guys, they can do that through Facebook. You've noted. And what's your Facebook account that they can connect with you?
Mine's just Heather Soto. He's not really on social media. So okay. questions for him come to me a lot. So absolutely.
Okay. Awesome. We'll put that in the show notes as well. Thank you so much, you guys.
Our pleasure.
God bless.
Thank you, guys.
All right, friends, we really hope that you got a ton out of today's conversation. And if you want help, if you want personal guidance with individual counseling or couples counseling, or even help with you as a couple reaching the goals you have, just reach out. Give us a call at 916-678-1797 or shoot us an email at hello@dearyoungmarriedcouple.com.
No matter where you are in the world or in your marriage, we can set up a counseling session with you and we can work toward progress. We also post marriage advice regularly on our Instagram, which is @dearyoungmarriedcouple. And we'd love for you to join us in conversation there. All right, see you next week.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.